Katie Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We can end this war in our Ukrainian terms. We can return our land and people from occupation. We can bring Russia to justice for what it has done. But for this to happen, we must fight. May victory be the reward for all those who fight for Ukraine.
As the war in Ukraine enters its third year, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is urging U.S. lawmakers to support a $60 billion military aid package for Ukraine. The Senate's approved the money, but Speaker Mike Johnson's refused to schedule a vote in the House. We'll host a debate on U.S. funding for Ukraine. Then we'll be joined by the legendary consumer advocate and four-time presidential candidate Ralph Nader. He turns 90 years old today.
Well, the important thing in the U.S. here is to focus on Congress and the White House, because they are waist-deep in this genocidal war in Gaza. The Congress is basically a rubber stamp and doesn't even have public hearings as it shovels billions of dollars to Israel.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As the official Palestinian death toll in Israel's war on Gaza nears 30,000, President Biden said Monday he hopes a ceasefire can be achieved by next Monday.
Well, I hope by the beginning of the weekend. I mean, the end of the weekend. At least my national security advisor tells me that we're close. We're close. It's not done yet. And my hope is by next Monday, we'll have a ceasefire.
President Biden made the comment in a New York City ice cream shop with late-night host Seth Meyers, whose show he appeared on Monday evening. Qatar, which is hosting negotiations, said it's optimistic a deal could be reached before Ramadan next month. Meanwhile, Reuters reports Hamas called Biden's remarks premature. Meanwhile, on the ground in Gaza, Israeli forces open fire again on people waiting for aid in Gaza City. A Palestinian man who was waiting for a delivery of flour pleaded with the world to take mercy on hungry Palestinians.
Look at us through the eyes of mercy, people. For the sake of Islam, look with mercy. Film so the people can see the starvation, how people are coming. They're carrying the martyrs on a donkey cart, on a bicycle. We don't have any value anymore. We don't have any value. No one is looking at us.
On Monday, Jordan and France conducted a joint operation to airdrop food to central and southern Gaza. Palestinians use rowboats to retrieve aid packages dropped at sea. Gazans continue to face starvation, affecting even its youngest babies who do not have access to milk or formula.
My son is supposed to have milk as a newborn, be it natural milk or formula milk, but I wasn't able to get him milk because there is no milk in Gaza. I had to give him a date because I can't provide milk for him because there is no food, there is no fruits. As a mother who just gave birth, there is no fruits or vegetables. There is nothing in Gaza.
In other news from Gaza, acclaimed artist Fathi Rabin has died after Israeli authorities denied him permission to travel for medical treatment. The 77-year-old artist suffered from severe chest and lung conditions, was unable to get care in Gaza due to the lack of oxygen and other crucial health resources in the besieged territory. His paintings immortalized the Palestinian struggle and the right of return. The International Court of Justice Monday concluded its six-day hearing on Israel's occupation of Palestinian territories. Representatives from over 50 nations and international organizations presented oral statements at The Hague, most arguing Israel's military occupation of the West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem is a violation of international law and calling for the establishment of an independent Palestinian state. This is Abdel Hakim El-Rafai with the League of Arab States.
This prolonged occupation is an affront to international justice. The failure to bring it to an end has led to the current horrors perpetrated against the Palestinian people, amounting to genocide. There can be no moral or juridical justification for occupying lands, killing, terrorizing, and displacing their populations.
In related news, human rights groups say Israel's completely ignored the World Court's order to take all measures within its power to prevent genocide in Gaza. 1 month after the ruling, Israel's continued to block most delivery of life-saving humanitarian aid, food, medicines, and fuel to Gaza. Since January's ruling, Israeli forces have killed over 3,400 Palestinians in Gaza. The Israeli government is expected to soon deliver its own 30-day assessment of compliance with the ICJ decision. In response, Omar Shakir with Human Rights Watch said, quote, Israel's blatant disregard for the World Court's order poses a direct challenge to the rules-based international order. Failure to ensure Israel's compliance puts the lives of millions of Palestinians at risk and threatens to undermine the institutions charged with ensuring respect for international law and the system that ensures civilian protection worldwide, he said. Vigils were held in Washington, D.C. and elsewhere Monday for Aaron Bushnell, an active-duty U.S. Air Force member who died after setting himself on fire outside the Israeli embassy in Washington to protest genocide in Gaza. The 25-year-old who live-streamed his self-immolation yelled Free Palestine as he was consumed by the flames. Marion Ingram, an 88-year-old artist, activist, and German Holocaust survivor, was at the D.C. vigil on Monday.
I urge you, Mr. President, I urge you, Congress, stop defunding Israel. Start making peace. It is time we stop killing children. I do not wish that people burn themselves to bring the point home. Mr. Biden, you should stop supporting the genocide in Gaza.
She was carrying a sign that said, Survivor says peace, not wars, in our name. You can see our interviews with Marion Ingram at democracynow.org. In response to Aaron Bushnell's act of protest, Palestinian poet and journalist Mohammed El-Kurd said, quote, if you're a soldier sacrificing yourself to protect U.S. interests, you're a rational, noble hero. But if you sacrifice yourself to protest the genocide your country is funding, you are mentally ill, unquote. Meanwhile, Pentagon spokesperson Pat Ryder dodged a reporter question about how military members feel about the U.S. role in Gaza.
But is the secretary concerned that this might indicate that there's a deeper issue, maybe the U.S. military being military personnel being concerned about how weapons and support for Israel is being used on civilians in Gaza?
Well, look, from a Department of Defense standpoint, since Hamas's brutal attacks on October 7th, we've been focused on the four key areas that the secretary set out from the onset. That's protecting U.S. forces and citizens in the region, supporting Israel's inherent right to defend itself from terrorist attacks, working closely with Israel to support and secure the release of hostages from Hamas.
In New York, hundreds of Jewish American activists and allies descended on 30 Rockefeller Center, headquarters of NBC, to disrupt President Biden's surprise appearance on Late Night with Seth Meyers. Around 50 activists were arrested, according to organizers. Elsewhere, the faculty at the University of Illinois Chicago overwhelmingly voted to call for a ceasefire in Gaza in a referendum last week. Outside the U.S.'s Ireland's Senate, outside of the United States, Ireland's Senate unanimously voted last week to impose sanctions against Israel, prevent the passage of U.S. weapons to Israel via Irish airspace, and advocate for an international arms embargo against Israel. This is Irish Senator Frances Black, who helped put forward the motion.
And I visited Gaza back in 2018, and the amazing people I met there, and the spirit of the people, and how amazing. And I don't know if they're dead. I don't know if they're alive. I remember one woman saying to me, when I was in Gaza back then, she said that she was a human rights, from a human rights organization, wonderful women's group. And she said, why have the international community abandoned us? And those words stay with me.
Israeli airstrikes in eastern Lebanon Monday killed at least two people believed to be members of Hezbollah. Israel's attacks on Baalbek came after Hezbollah confirmed it has shot down an Israeli drone in southern Lebanon. Later on Monday, Hezbollah said it fired dozens of rockets at an Israeli military base in retaliation. Elsewhere, U.S. forces said it carried out preemptive strikes against Houthi targets in Yemen, destroying missiles, unmanned vessels, and a drone. In election news, voters in the battleground state of Michigan are casting their primary ballots today. The group Listen to Michigan has been urging Democrats to vote uncommitted to show their opposition to President Biden's refusal to stop Israel's assault on Gaza. Michigan's Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer, who's been campaigning for Biden, predicted during an interview Monday, quote, there will be a sizable number of votes for uncommitted, unquote. Members of the 300,000-strong Arab American community in Michigan and others gathered on Sunday ahead of the vote.
We need to show President Biden and all the other candidates that we support Palestine. We don't support our U.S. tax dollars going towards Israel to ethnically cleanse Palestine. And this is a human cause, and so we're all showing up.
Activists in Minnesota recently launched their own uncommitted campaign ahead of Minnesota's presidential primary, March 5th. A close associate of Alexei Navalny says the late Russian opposition leader was days away from being released in a prisoner exchange. Maria Pevchik, chair of Navalny's Anti-Corruption Foundation, spoke on Alexei Navalny's YouTube channel.
Navalny was everything Putin could never be, and Putin hated him for it. But why did he kill him now? Why February 16th? Alexei Navalny could have been sitting in my place right now, today. This is not a figure of speech. This could have and should have happened. Navalny was supposed to be free in the coming days because we had achieved a decision on his exchange.
Maria Pevchik accused Putin of killing Navalny to prevent the swap from happening. Navalny was allegedly to be exchanged for two unnamed U.S. nationals and Vadim Krasikov, a Russian Secret Service member who's serving a life sentence in Germany for the 2019 murder of a Kremlin dissident. Media outlets speculate the two American citizens could be Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich and former Marine Paul Whelan. Denmark's closed its investigation into the 2022 blasts on the Nord Stream pipelines, which were built to carry natural gas from Russia to Europe. Danish authorities concluded there was deliberate sabotage of the pipelines, but insufficient evidence to pursue the case. Sweden dropped its own probe into the matter earlier this month. Moscow's blamed the U.S., the U.K., and Ukraine for the explosions. French President Emmanuel Macron is leading a European effort to send more arms to Ukraine. These will include more middle and long-range missiles. Macron also did not rule out eventually sending French or other Western troops to Ukraine. He spoke Monday at a Paris conference of 20 European leaders.
Everything was discussed in a free and direct manner tonight. There was no consensus today to send troops onto the ground in a manner that's official, assumed, and endorsed. But on the dynamic, nothing should be excluded. We will do everything so that Russia cannot win this war.
Sweden's cleared its final obstacle to join NATO after Hungary's parliament ratified Stockholm's bid Monday. The Swedish prime minister hailed the historic step.
Sweden is leaving behind 200 years of neutrality and military non-alignment. As far as Russia is concerned, the only thing we can safely expect is that they do not like Sweden becoming a NATO member. They didn't like Finland becoming a NATO member either. The whole purpose was to emphasize that a country like Ukraine would not be allowed to choose its own path.
Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban had blocked Sweden's bid for membership for over 18 months, but finally relented following last week's deal for Sweden to sell Hungary four fighter jets. In Burkina Faso, dozens of people were killed after an attack Sunday on a mosque in Natibouani in the east of the country. Armed individuals reportedly entered the mosque and opened fire as people gathered for morning prayer. On the same day, at least 15 people were killed in a separate attack on a Catholic church during Sunday Mass in northern Burkina Faso. And back here in New York, a former professor at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine in the Bronx has donated $1 billion to cover tuition payments of all students for the foreseeable future. The medical school will be free for all. Ruth Gottesman's donation is one of the largest ever made to an educational institution in the United States. The 93-year-old professor who studied learning disabilities and created an adult literacy program was married to a Wall Street financier who left her the money when he died in 2022. She made the announcement to a crowd of students who erupted in cheers. Dr. Oney Blackstock, emergency medicine physician, author and founder of Advancing Health Equity, said on social media, quote, "Hoping there is positive impact on the health of Bronxites, home to the poorest congressional district in the U.S. I also hope this helps to recruit more Black, Latinx and indigenous student groups that are woefully underrepresented in medicine and do not have same level of generational wealth as their white counterparts." Professor Gottesman insisted a condition of the gift was that the school does not change its name to hers, telling the New York Times, quote, "We've got the gosh darn name. We've got Albert Einstein," she said. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. Coming up, as the war in Ukraine enters its third year, we host a debate on U.S. funding for Ukraine. Stay with us.
Over the ashes of blood march the civilized soldiers. Over the ruins of the French fortress of a failure. Over the silent screams of the dead and the dying. But please be reassured, we seek no other war. The treaties were signed, the country was split into sections. But growing numbers of prisons were built for protection, rapidly filling with people who called for election. But please be reassured, we seek no other war. The golden, the M was...
We seek no wider war by Phil Oakes. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Well, we begin today's show looking at the war in Ukraine. Saturday marked 2 years since Russian forces invaded Ukraine. This month also marks 10 years since Russia moved to seize Crimea from Ukraine after mass protests forced the ouster of Ukraine's pro-Russian president, Viktor Yanukovych. Russia's long accused the United States of orchestrating a coup in Ukraine in 2014. Leaders from many European nations gathered in Paris Monday and pledged to send more arms to Ukraine, including medium and long-range missiles. French President Emmanuel Macron said he cannot rule out sending ground troops to Ukraine to fight Russian forces.
Everything was discussed in a free and direct manner tonight. There was no consensus today to send troops onto the ground in a manner that's official, assumed, and endorsed. But on the dynamic, nothing should be excluded. We will do everything so that Russia cannot win this war.
The second anniversary of the war comes amidst an intense debate in Washington over U.S. funding for Ukraine. Earlier this month, the Senate approved a $95 billion foreign aid package that includes $60 billion in military aid for Ukraine. Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson's refused to schedule a vote on the funding. President Biden's hosting Johnson and other congressional leaders at the White House today to press for the military aid package that also includes $14 billion for Israel. Biden's also attempting to avert a partial government shutdown Friday. In an interview on CNN, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky claimed millions of people could die if U.S. lawmakers don't approve the funding. Zelensky was interviewed by CNN's Caitlin Collins.
Senator J.D. Vance, who was in Munich at the security conference but didn't meet with you, he said that even if you got the $60 billion in aid, it is not going to fundamentally change the reality on the battlefield. What's your response to that?
I'm not sure that he understands what's going on here. And We don't need any rhetoric of from people who are not deeply in the war. So to understand it is to come to the front line to see what's going on, to speak with the people, then to go to civilians to understand what will be with them, and then what will be with them without this support, and he will understand that millions of people have been killed. Will be killed.
So he doesn't understand it.
Because he doesn't understand it. Of course, God bless you, don't have the war on your territory.
The debate over U.S. funding for Ukraine comes as more details emerge about how the CIA has played a critical role assisting Ukraine on the battlefield. The New York Times has revealed the CIA helped build a network of 12 secret spy bases along the Russian border over the past 8 years. The Times reports the CIA has also trained elite Ukrainian commando forces and a new generation of Ukrainian spies. Just last week, CIA Director William Burns made a secret trip to Ukraine, 10th visit since Russia's invasion 2 years ago. To talk more about the war in Ukraine and U.S. funding, we're joined by two guests, Medea Benjamin, co-founder of Code Pink, co-author of the book War in Ukraine, Making Sense of a Senseless Conflict. Her new piece for The Progressive is headlined After 2 Years of War in Ukraine, It's Time for Peace. She's joining us from Miami. And in Cleveland, Ohio, we're joined by Stephen Crowley. He's a professor of politics at Oberlin College, where he's the chair of Russian, East European, and Eurasian Studies. His latest book is titled Putin's Labor Dilemma, Russian Politics Between Stability and Stagnation. His latest piece for The Responsible Statecraft is headlined Pass Ukraine Aid, But Make It Conditional on Ending the War. Professor Crowley, let's begin with you. Explain what you are proposing.
Hi, Amy. Good to hear from you. Good to be part of this. So, yeah, I think the one reason to fund Ukraine is to bring the war to an end. To my mind, that's the only reason. This war has gone on for 2 years. Even though we're in the 21st century, we have drones and satellites and precision missiles. It's essentially descended into trench warfare that looks very much like World War I. Many people continue to die on both sides, and yet the lines barely move at all. And yet we hear pundits and political leaders talking about the possibility of a long war. 2014 might be bad for Ukraine, but 2015 might somehow miraculously be better. This, to my mind, just seems like magical thinking. I think the only reason to fund Ukraine right now is to get both sides to the negotiating table to end this war.
And Medea Benjamin, what about this issue of providing more weapons to end the war?
Well, with all due respect to Stephen, I just don't understand it at all. I mean, you give more money precisely for the war to keep going. And let's remember the package that is being proposed now in the House. As you said in the introduction, it's not just $60 billion for Ukraine. It's also $14 billion for Israel as part of that. It also says no money can be going to the relief agency UNRWA. And it also has billions of dollars for Taiwan and the Indo-Pacific to antagonize China. This package should be fiercely opposed by progressives all over the country, because it will only continue the war in Ukraine as well as continue other wars on other continents. This is exactly what the world doesn't need, what the American public doesn't need. It's a terrible bill and must be opposed.
And Professor Crowley, I wanted to ask you about this New York Times piece that came out on Sunday about the CIA's long involvement in training elite troops that were, some of them were conducting sabotage and assassinations during the period, not after the Russian invasion, but before the Russian invasion, during the war in Donbass. And so it's clear that the CIA was involved back to about 2014 and 2015 on the ground in Ukraine. Does that reshape the way we look at, because surely Putin must have known that. He must have known about the CIA involvement on the ground in Ukraine. Does that give a shed new light on the reasons why Putin decided to invade?
I think it might run. If you look closely at that New York Times article, they sort of briefly brush past the a couple of sentences where they said that Russia was aware of this and saw this as rather provocative, that perhaps the United States was intending to perhaps act aggressively or even, you know, invade Russia. And they just sort of, and he said, of course, that's not true, so we don't really need to consider that any further. But we have grievously failed to consider the other side, to look at things from the Russian perspective. And it's very easy to demonize Putin. He does a very good job of making that quite possible. His policies are really quite vile. But we have made a mistake in understanding the provocative nature, going back to NATO expansion, as your readers and listeners will be well aware of. And this happened for years. This predated Putin being in power. And unfortunately, this sort of mentality is continuing. And if we don't recognize the dangers, the provocations that led to this conflict, this war, even though this was Putin's decision to invade, but nevertheless, there is another side to this. If we don't learn that lesson, we're going to slow walk into another war, I'm afraid, between the United States and China over Taiwan. Because we're still thinking in terms of deterrence. We have to be strong, we have to deter the other side, and we neglect the fact that this can create insecurity on the other side that just leads to buildup, escalation, and eventually to violence and war.
Professor Stephen Crowley, your piece is headlined, Pass Ukraine Aid, but Make It Conditional on Ending the War. And I wanted to ask both you and Medea Benjamin, this part of it, how do you make it conditional on that? What would negotiations look like? What would bring both sides to the table? And do you think there are secret talks going on right now?
I do not know whether there's talks going on right now, but there absolutely should be. And I'm afraid there's been lots of hints that, well, there's been speculation. People have said, well, Putin doesn't want to negotiate, or they said he says he wants to negotiate, but he really is just doing this to deter the West from supplying, giving any support to Ukraine. And my answer to that is, well, test that. Let's call it. Let's say we're ready to negotiate. We can't simply leave this to the Ukrainians. It's understandable that their country wasn't invaded. They want to do everything they can to repel the invader. But it's on us, the people that are sending rockets and military material there, to remind the Ukrainians, look, this isn't going to get any better for you. It could only get worse. And now is the time to negotiate. And if Putin isn't willing to negotiate, then call him on that. Then just say, yes, this is on him now. But I think there are many signs of war fatigue in Russia as well as Ukraine. They're more hidden behind the repressive atmosphere and the propaganda and so forth. But Russia itself is also tiring of war.
And Medea Benjamin, if you could respond to that, what would a negotiation look like and what would bring both sides to the table?
Well, it's tragic because we know exactly what a negotiation would look like, because it was happening 4 days after the Russian invasion. There had been a series of talks going on for the entire month, and they came up with a 15-point plan, which was, in essence, that Russia that Ukraine would not join NATO, that Ukraine would be a neutral country in exchange for guarantees by other countries. The Ukrainians had even agreed at that time to put the issue of Crimea off well into the future. They talked about a 15-year consultation on the status of Crimea. The essence of what peace talks would be are already very clear. And let's also be clear that it is the U.S. and the U.K. that sabotaged those early peace talks. They said to Ukraine that Putin is a war criminal, should not be negotiated with, and if you come up with a deal, we will not back it. We have also seen in these 2 years all these attempts by countries around the world, whether it is China or Mexico or Brazil or the six African nations that have come forward with peace plans that the U.S. has just dismissed. So we have to recognize that the U.S., as the Secretary of Defense had said, wants to use this as an opportunity to weaken Russia. And so pouring more money into this conflict is just going to mean more Ukrainians going to be killed, more conscripted Russian soldiers going to be killed. We have to seize this moment right now, not give more money, and say this is the time to go to the negotiating table. In fact, Ukraine is in a worse position now than it was a year ago.